I apologize for already messing up the timetable. I hopefully will be able, if I don't ramble on too long, which is, those of you who know me well, is a distinct possibility, I'll be able to take hopefully a few questions. I don't think it would be in keeping with the spirit of openness if I was to speak, leave, and not take any questions at all. The reason, and I try to continue in the vein of keeping in with the spirit of openness, the reason I have to speak early and depart early is of the involvement in the talks process, which is continuing on today. Look, I think, Joe, thank you very much for the introduction. Thank you as well for the invitation to be here this morning. The whole area of open government is something that, particularly since taking office myself just over a year ago, is something I've been incredibly interested in. I want to talk about in a moment or two about three broad areas where I think we can continue and improve with our own openness in Northern Ireland, and give you some examples of where we are already doing that. Because I think it's important to, whilst I think the work of the partnership is incredibly important, but I think the network here in Northern Ireland will be very productive for us moving forward. We're not going from a standing start. There are things that we are doing already which I think are in keeping with the principles of open government. Particularly welcome Lizetta as well, and her presence as a representative from the Cabinet Office. I've met with Francis and engaged with him on a range of issues, including this subject, and I think that what the Cabinet Office is doing in a range of areas is something that all of us in Northern Ireland should be looking very carefully at. I wouldn't say that the Department of Finance and Personnel is the Cabinet Office in Northern Ireland, but there are a lot of the things that the Cabinet Office does that DFP is responsible for. I think we have perhaps an added advantage in DFP in that, as well as being responsible for those reform-orientated areas of policy, we're also in control of the money. And we can, where possible, obviously in the environment that we're in at the minute, money is constrained. But things like the change fund that I launched in the draft budget just the other day to try to encourage collaboration between departments, to try to encourage departments to be innovative in their policy development, to focus on early intervention and prevention, is something that we have been able to do as a department that perhaps Cabinet Office in and of itself may not have been able to do without Treasury support. So I think we have in our structure, actually, if we grasp this issue of open government, we have, I think, structural benefits in terms of the way our government in Northern Ireland is structured. You know, often hear somebody saying the way our government is structured in Northern Ireland can be actually an advantage. Northern Ireland is, of course, a member of the Open Government Partnership by being part of the United Kingdom. And there are UK-level action plans and commitments which, I suppose, affect Northern Ireland. But I do think there is an issue in terms of Northern Ireland not developing it ourselves and perhaps being a little bit behind in this agenda compared to the UK national government. I don't think it's enough for Northern Ireland just to say we are a member of the Open Government Partnership because of, by virtue of being part of the United Kingdom, and therefore whatever the United Kingdom government does is sufficient for Northern Ireland. I don't think that's going to cut it in respect of this issue, and that's why. And I see it as an advantage too in terms of much of the work that I'm trying to do within the Department of Finance and Personnel, particularly around public sector reform. I gave a speech to the SIPFA conference a couple of weeks ago, in which I tried to outline sort of 10 underlying principles of reform, and one of those was openness, particularly around policy making and around data. And I'll talk about those in a minute. You know, I think that openness in government is a good thing in and of itself. And I can understand there are many motivations. There's the motivation, of course, that, you know, that as the video highlighted, that there isn't great satisfaction with governments anywhere in the world, and certainly in the Western developed world. And I think trying to be more openness helps to tackle that. It is a good thing in and of itself for the government to be much more accountable to its citizens. But I also think that where you have citizens involved much more in their government, the resulting policies that come out of government, the actions that government take and the outcomes that we seek will therefore be better tuned to what the public want, what they need and what they demand. There are three areas where I think I just want to focus on, if I can, where we are already, I think, engaged in open government in Northern Ireland, even if it isn't badged or branded particularly in that sort of way. And I've been following Paul's comments on his posts on Slugger O'Toole over the last couple of days. Very, very helpful of him to do that. Helps to focus me in terms of what I was going to say. Thank you for that, Paul. And first one thing I want to talk about is around policy making. This is an area where I think there's huge opportunity for us in Northern Ireland around open policy making. We've already, I think, engaged in and started in my department an area which has huge potential in terms of open policy making, and that is by creating a Northern Ireland public sector innovation laboratory. I always caution, whenever I talk about the Northern Ireland Public Sector Innovation Laboratory, I always caution people to say this is not an actual laboratory. Nobody wears a white coat. There are no Bunsen burners involved. It is a concept rather than an actual physical space. This was something that I was keen to develop after having been to Copenhagen roughly about a year ago. Went to a place that they have within their government called Mind Lab, which actually is don't know if Lizetta's been to it or familiar with it, but it is actually a physical space where it is largely white in colour, strange, and it does look a bit forensic. But the concept is one where it's within government, and so is our laboratory, but you bring in people from outside of government to help in the development of policy. So we've had recently our first public sector innovation laboratory. It was on the subject of regulatory impact assessments, not a particularly sexy subject, not one that will have anybody in the room, I'm sure, excited, but an important subject for many within the business sector, for example. And what we did instead of, and that was a subject which the responsibility of the Department for Enterprise, Trade and Investment, and what they were going to do with, they needed to update their policy on regulatory impact assessments, and what they were planning to do was go out to tender, get a consultancy firm to come in and do the work and report back. And there would have been engagement, I'm sure, and I'm looking at Peter, who is a consultant, that's how he's making his living today. No disrespect, I'm sure Peter would have done a fantastic job had he been doing that work. But I think we're all familiar with how consultation around those types of things can work sometimes. Yes, they go out and they speak to all of the relevant parties, and a report is produced, but nobody really gets a sense of satisfaction that they have had a proper input into the process. So instead of going out to tender and getting consultants to come in and look at this issue of regulatory impact assessments, we put it into the lab. And what you had in that lab was, yes, officials from my department helping to facilitate and enable. You had officials from DETI, who obviously had policy responsibility for this area. You also had public servants from other departments, so from the DOE and others who are involved in regulatory impact assessments. We then brought in people from the business community. So we had representatives of the Federation of Small Business. We had people from the renewables industry present as well. And you had a mixture of people from public and private sector, officials and people from business, thrashing out the issues. A lot of work is done beforehand in terms of scoping out the issues. But then they sat down over a period of a couple of days, intensively 9 to 5 and beyond, for about 2 or 3 days, and talked through the issues and then produced a report, which everybody around that table in that lab endorsed. And they were able then to present to Arlene and I collectively what their conclusions were and made recommendations to us about what we should take forward in respect of this issue. So that's an area where I think that, and as an example of where already there is an openness in terms of policy making. Now, it needs to be refined, needs to be developed. We need to move into other areas, and we have plans to do laboratories on innovation and procurement and dementia, the issue of ageing. So you're getting bigger and more serious and broader right across different public sector areas. I'm very, very keen that we continue that approach and develop that approach. Whenever I was in Denmark, they were very keen on talking about the whole concept of co-production. So government and citizens working together, business, voluntary and community sector working together with government to co-produce policy. I've appointed to my Ministerial Advisory Council on Public Sector Reform a guy called Marco Steinberg, who's from Finland. Marco's a leading world expert in the whole concept of design of public services. He's currently in Mexico City working on this. He was in Chile a couple of weeks ago. He's coming back to Northern Ireland. What a glamorous lifestyle this gentleman leads. But he was an academic in Harvard for a number of years. He returned home to Helsinki recently, where he operated the Helsinki Design Lab for 5 years. So this is a guy who is at the cutting edge of this type of co-production and design of public services using citizens and government together. And I think I'm going to tap into his expertise to try to develop this whole concept in Northern Ireland. Finally, in terms of open policy making, the OECD has been engaged by the Northern Ireland Executive to carry out a public governance review, the first ever sub-national public governance review that it has undertaken. It's going to carry that out with Northern Ireland over the next 18 months. And one of the areas that I have asked them to concentrate on is citizen engagement and how can we, as we are trying to develop and tailor public services in what is a very constrained financial set of circumstances, how can we improve our levels of citizen engagement? I can move on to open budgets. I thought I might be able to, whenever I accepted this event, I thought I might be avoid the subject of budgets, but I don't think a finance minister goes too far without having been drawn back into his core business. And reading through Paul's postings over the weekend about open budgeting in particular, it was interesting that the UK government as a whole gets a very good mark in terms of its open budget. And you know, I think that, again, we could, in the fact that we mirror many respects the national government and what we do, we could sort of seek some degree of solace in that and say, like, we're doing okay. Well, UK government's doing okay, so we must be doing okay as well. An area where I think we are in a slightly better position than the UK government is what we have started into at this minute in time. So the budget that was published the other day wasn't the budget. It is a draft budget. Sometimes I envy the Chancellor and his ability to stand up in the House of Commons and say, this is the budget, and then the very next day introduces a Finance Act, and a week later it is the Finance Act, or Finance Bill, and it becomes a Finance Act. But I think what we do in Northern Ireland is probably better in terms of keeping with the concept and principles of open government. So it was out for an 8-week consultation. I'd have preferred it to be longer. Circumstances mean that we have had to curtail that down to 8 weeks. But it is a consultation, and is a meaningful consultation. There will be engagement with the general public, obviously, through who can feed back into the process, but there will also be structured stakeholder events over the next 8 weeks. Committees will be scrutinising precisely what departments wish to allocate to their particular services, interest groups, general public, whoever can feed into that process as well. That is then gathered together by the Finance Committee, who produce a collective report in terms of all of the responses that they get, verbal or oral, to each departmental committee. So there is a system and a process there which is already in place, which has been tried and tested. I think it could be improved. I put a paper to the Executive last December about how I thought we could have got a much more strategic approach running up to the draft budget. Unfortunately, the Executive didn't agree that process, but had we have had that in place, we would have had pre-consultations and various events and trying to seek out better an understanding of the strategic priorities of the public in Northern Ireland were, and that could have fed into the draft budget process rather than us doing that after the draft budget is published. So I think there's scope to improve that, and I have a review of the financial process, which is outstanding as well, which I would like the Executive to agree, which would again help us in trying to be a lot more open in our budget making in Northern Ireland. Paul's post talked about participatory budgeting, and I'll be perfectly honest that maybe I'm a little old-fashioned in this regard, but we have a representative democracy where people are elected to go and serve the people for a period of time. So I'm not sure whether I would be supportive of a purely participatory budgetary system where the consultation that you would have with the general public would result in actual decisions being taken on the basis of what decisions came out of those discussions. I think it is important that our citizens feed into the budget process, that it is open and all information is available to them. But I'm not sure about a pure participatory budgetary scheme in Northern Ireland. I think it is still important that our politicians, whoever is elected to serve at Stormont, take those decisions on behalf of the citizens who elect them. I think there is also scope for perhaps more transparency in what we are spending as a government. I remember a TED talk by the Prime Minister where he highlighted a thing called the Missouri Accountability Portal. So the state of Missouri in the US has a portal which everybody can go, we can all go onto it and see how much they are spending. And I think that's something that has been developed at a UK level as well, where over a particular threshold, all expenditure is published. I think that is good in terms of accountability, but it is also good in the whole area of procurement, which my department is responsible as well for. So those who are wanting to enter into or already in the procurement system can see where money is being spent, what is being paid for certain things, and they can start to think about their own products that they're trying to sell to government. Finally, if I may, and I want to talk about open data, this is an area where I think we are making significant progress in Northern Ireland. And the video talked about citizens being able to feedback digitally to government to report faults, problems, issues, whatever it might be. We are developing a whole suite of particularly apps around doing that in Northern Ireland for our executive departments. We have also launched recently, a website called Spatial NI, which developed my land and property services within my department, which is a website and a portal which allows you to access all government locational data and then do lots of different things with that. And that's proven very useful. It proved very useful at a central government level in terms of planning for the storm surge or the flooding that there was and the tidal surge that there was around last Christmas. And the data that is produced on that website allows emergency services and others to plot incidents and problems that might happen and where key facilities and key infrastructure is and planning an event for such events. But it also allows the general public to see who owns a piece of land, where their nearest facilities are and so on and so forth. We have developed further beyond that. And I think what Cabinet Office and the UK government did with Open Data, where they sort of effectively took all data and kind of dumped it and put it out there, was one approach to it. We have probably gone for a slower approach and trying to add value to the data and make it easier for the citizen to use. So that's why Spatial NI was developed. But we have gone a little bit further, and we are now developing our own open data strategy. That's being done through the digital transformation team within my own department, who are taking that forward. And we are looking at having, again, a portal through our NI Direct website where people can access open data. They can feedback about existing data, and they can we can finesse and change that as we move forward. We have also recently launched, again, myself and Arlene Fosser launched an open data challenge. And I had been very interested previously in what had things in the States, so organisations like Code for America and the sort of hackathons that they had run want to do something similar here in Northern Ireland. So we ran our own open data challenge, £5,000 prize for the best use of existing public data. So that was the sort of stuff that NISRA are publishing and publish on an ongoing basis. And that was won by a local firm, Detactics. I never get it right whenever I'm saying that. But a very good local firm has won that prize. And that's something, again, I think we can encourage, particularly as we get more and more data out there into the public domain. Thanks. Can I thank you again for the opportunity to be here? I hope that I've been able to outline some of the things that we are doing in this space. I think one of the things that perhaps has inhibited our development in Northern Ireland in this area is the fact that we are not, in and of ourselves, members of the Open Government Partnership. And I have, through officials, sought to understand whether we could join, and I've been told that we're not, as a devolved region, allowed to be actual members of the Open Government Partnership. At the time whenever I asked, it was sort of early September, and I didn't take it to heart as a personal snub for Northern Ireland. I thought it was probably more on the basis that the UK government didn't want Scotland to become an individual member of the Open Government Partnership. But I think where there is a limitation in us not being ourselves a member is that it doesn't allow us to benchmark ourselves against international best practice. And I find this in quite a lot of different ways, and I'm having conversations with officials and others about how in lots of different areas, lots of different indexes, lots of different surveys that are published internationally would show, this is where a particular state is on. It could be gender gap or prosperity or ease of doing business or whatever it might be. It's hard for us as Northern Ireland to benchmark ourselves against international best practice to see whether we're going up or down the league table, because we get thrown into the overall UK figure. We may be better than the UK figure, we may be worse than the UK figure, but it's hard for us to know whether we are or not. And the same is true for open government. And where there is analysis of how an administration is performing or not, or it is at that national level. And I would like to be able to see, even if we can't become members of the partnership, perhaps we can have that information analysed at a more granular level to see how we're performing in Northern Ireland. But can I conclude by saying thank you again for the invitation. Encourage the network and the work that it's doing. Happy and very pleased to meet with the network again after this event. I think it's important that feedback comes back and comes back to me, and if I'm able to take anything forward to enhance open government in Northern Ireland, particularly around budgeting, around policy making, around the use of open data, very pleased to be able to take that forward. And can again thank you for the invitation to be here this morning. Thank you.